At a meeting, a service. Greeting someone at the door, a service. Obviously serving, you know, as a in the groups, in the districts, in the areas, at world level, all those things are service and giving back what was so freely given to you. And in service, you're going to run into all kinds of people. It's a great opportunity. You know, what I found more than anything else in service is that I have grown, my level of PTA, which is patience, tolerance, and acceptance, has skyrocketed by working at the farther down the scale I go. You know, we have an inverted triangle of service. The groups are at the top, the members are at the top, the groups, district, area, world, office, and the World Service Board of Trustees, the very tip. And the farther down I go on that scale, the more I get to grow as spiritually and mentally as a human being. And that's really what I'm here for. You know, I want to be the best Brian I can be. And service is one of the great ways I have found to improve my overall spiritual condition. You know, the key, of course, to anything we do is to stay solution-based and to work together to carry the message. But we have to be mindful, like I said, is that our experiences are all different. Where we come from are different. And we have to remember we're all volunteers on God's broad highway. So, you know, we also have a tendency to not like to be told what to do. We are very good at rebelling against anything that is an authoritative figure or suggested guidelines. Anything that's good for us sometimes, even events, workshops, conventions, anything we put on, sometimes we just rebel against that. We're just good at that. None of us want to be told what to do, and especially in the beginning, we don't always come in necessarily as open-minded as we hope to be today. So what is love and service exactly? Dr. Bob in his farewell talk talked about our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. And that was from July 3rd, 1950 speech at the first International AA Convention. So what is love exactly? Where is the love? Well, tradition 2 states that a loving God is he may express himself in our group conscience. So what does it mean to be loving of ourselves? You know, we want to stay respective spiritually of ourselves. We want to take care of ourselves. We want to be able to love ourselves. You know, the dictionary description of the love is to take delight or pleasure in, to have a strong liking or desire for, or interest in, to be pleased with, to like, as to love books, to love the adventures. Another one, to have a feeling of love for, to regard with affection or goodwill. A feeling of strong attachment induced by that which delights or commands admiration. It's a positive emotion, something positive. We got to remember, though, that a lot of us came in with not necessarily as healthy as we might be today, and our definitions and our views of love might have come from distorted households or distorted relationships, certainly distorted thinking. And so we have to try to, one of the goals is to try to revamp that and rethink how we do, how we feel about the word love and our emotions. Service helps do that. So being of service, of course, is a key to us. And service can take, as I said, many levels. Obviously, sponsorship is the most important thing we do here. Is, you know, and it talks about working with others, that practical experience shows that nothing so much will ensure immunity against the first drink as intensive work with other alcoholics. And of course, that can be at any level. Well, obviously, one-on-one is mandatory as far as I'm concerned. We have to help each other. You know, we talk about our tradition one is, you know, our common welfare should come first. So we always need to help each other there. But it also, you know, consists of going to H&I meetings and being a greeter at groups, picking up chairs, you know, doing what John's doing up here, taping conferences, being a trusted servant. You know, getting involved in the fellowship and helping others. So I was told early on to get involved and give back. And my question to a lot of people, well, what does that service have to do with my sobriety? I thought it was just these 12-step things. And of course, it has everything to do with my sobriety. Thank God that someone was doing service when I came in these rooms, because they were here for me. You know, they carried the message to the treatment facility. It turned out that the gentleman who brought me to CA, who got me to come to these groups, ended up being my grand sponsor. I didn't know at the time, but he came to a treatment facility and he gave his message, his spiel. And at the time, Well, at the time, I really wasn't even concerned. I wasn't even sure I was going to stick around for this deal. But I heard the message of hope and of faith and of recovery. And I thought, if this guy can get sober, anybody can do it. So maybe I'll come around to these meetings and give it a shot. So it's very important to me. It's everything that encompasses what my recovery is today. You know, I think it talks about the fact that the very survival of CA depends on the fact that I can be informed, involved, and intensely concerned with the service structure. You know, if CA ever fails, it will come from the inside, not from the outside. It will be the uninformed, the apathetic, indifferent members who no longer care. You know, I got mine. I don't need to, you know, someone else can do that. And that's a very negative way to look at it. And my deal today is that I'm here to be God conscious, and that means I have to help others. I have to get out of myself. It's a continual message of this workshop is to help others. Continue to do for outside of myself. I don't want to always go to meetings. I do a lot of service over the years. You think I want to get up early on a Sunday and go to the area and district meetings all day long? No, you know, I've missed many events over the years, Hawks games, Bears games, all kinds of things that I enjoy and wanted to do. And if it was up to me, I'd take the easier, softer way. But it's not always up to me because I find that the more I get out of myself, the better I become. So one of the things we learn is that service is about gratitude and learning how to contribute to the lives, my life and the life of others. Many reasons why do we be of service? Well, you know, to give back what was so freely given to us. To take on a commitment as a symbolic way of making amends. To we meet other people. Now, I was isolator. I didn't want to meet anybody. I didn't want to be involved. I was fearful. You know, getting involved and learning to meet other people and become part of a team. You know, it was always about, yeah, I'll do it my way, not about being part of. And service is a great way to become part of. I was very shy and fearful and introverted when I walked into these rooms. I didn't want to do, yeah, I know, Mike, it's hard to believe, but I didn't want to get involved. I didn't want to do anything. And I was forced into doing service, you know. I said, you're going to do this. And it's like, well, okay. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me because it got me involved. And it got me out of my shell and understand that I can make mistakes, I can be human. And that was a great thing. I also learned humility by doing something selfless for someone else. And I can learn skills that to teach to others. One of the most important things, you know, serving as a member of the Board of Trustees, my job is to educate the fellowship. We don't govern, we don't make rules, even though we will make decisions at times. The thing is to educate, and that the people, that you, the groups, individuals make those decisions based on information. And I'll talk a little later about informed information. And that is the key to everything, is being informed, making sure you understand what the whole process and hearing everybody. One of the other things is being of service is to learn responsibility and be accountable. I'm a lazy bum at heart. I'm really good at being a lazy bum. Service keeps me responsible and keeps me accountable. I have responsibilities today. I've had them ever since I walked into the rooms doing service, whether it was making coffee. I had to get there early, make sure that coffee pot was ready, because when that meeting started, people wanted coffee. So I had to get there early and make sure it was done. There were times I had to set rooms up. You know, I had to open the doors. They actually gave me keys to things. So that was my job, to be there on time and be responsible. I've seen people, they get the meeting starts at 8 o'clock, well, I'll get there at 8 o'clock to make the coffee. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. You know, this is teaching me a new way of thinking. Some of the gifts of service, you know, I get to keep what we have. We get to pass recovery on, and that's the greatest gift. We make a difference in other people's lives. It's a gift to do this. And while sometimes some people look at it as a hassle and a problem and what a pain, there's nothing easier to maintain and further our development than doing helping others. So it's a great, great thing. Talk a little bit about structure of Cocaine Anonymous. And you know, we are not organized in any formal or political sense. There's no governing officers, there's no rules or regulations, no dues or fees. We do have service committees that are directly responsible to those they serve, which means that anybody, whether it's your district or your area or your group, is responsible to the members who make that up. You know, I've seen area committees sometimes decide they want to do their own deal. They don't really care what the rest of the area says, but they're responsible to every one of those members. It's kind of like, you know, when you put your dollar in the basket, you have a say on where that dollar goes. You know, but that's if you participate, if you want to have a say. You should have a say. You know, the main body is service body of CA is the World Service Office, which was located in Long Beach, California now. It just moved from Los Angeles. It's made up of service volunteers from the local groups, persons doing the fellowship turn there, they get information, the office sends out literature. It's a clearinghouse for public information, for people who have questions, inside and outside the fellowship. You know, people, they deal with newspapers, people who have questions about that, about the fellowship. They'll call the World Service Office. The office is made up of currently a director of operations, a staff of about two paid employees, a World Service Office treasurer. There's a new director they just hired for special projects, such as translations, fundraising. So they'll have some new projects they're working on. And there's six director positions, which are members of the fellowship, who help, you know, fulfill those responsibilities. They fulfill the responsibilities of the World Service Conference and the members, the delegates who go out there. The delegates, those are the people who represent you. You know, Tom is your new delegate here from Wisconsin, and he represents your voice and your vote out at the conference, where decisions are made that, you know, to affect some of it affects, a lot of it has to do with this book here, the World Service Manual, which is just, you know, how we suggest that you conduct business, suggest that you run meetings, what some of the questions are that keep us tradition-oriented so that we don't get off the beam so much. Currently, you know, CA is growing. It's still growing. In the United States, actually, we're kind of a stagnant. But if you go to Europe right now, we are exploding out there. Meetings have sprung up in Spain, Italy, Iran, Russia, Poland. They've translated the Hope, Faith, and Courage storybook into Swedish. It's completed now. They're actually printing it up for them. They're having their 10th annual convention next month, and they're going to preview the book. Spain is about 6 or 7 chapters into translating the book into Spanish. There's a meeting now just started in Chile. England has well over 250 meetings there now. Just a few years ago, they had like 50 or 60. They're just skyrocketing. It's awesome. Ireland just became an area. Scotland, Denmark, Holland. So it's really, it's great, great growth there. Some of the areas here, a little stagnation, and we find it harder to get people involved. You know, it's part of that is starting at the group level. You know, get involved with your groups, your local, start, you know, at the base, at the top of the triangle. You know, a Cocaine Anonymous group is basically made up of a couple members who say they're a group. You know, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. The group is fully self-supporting. Its primary purpose is to help addicts recover through the 12 steps of CA, and it has no outside affiliations and no opinion on outside issues. You're a group, you know. Now, as a group, then you have certain positions that you hopefully will fill. You know, you can get involved as a secretary, someone who chairs the meeting. You want to be a GSR. You know, GSR is probably the most important position you can hold in all of CA, because you are represent. Everything comes through you. Any information presented to the fellowship as a whole flows through your mouth. So, of course, how you present it and your enthusiasm and your knowledge can affect your entire group. You know, we all know we can distort the truth any way we want to. We're very good at it. We're expert at it. So, you know, as a GSR and you're talking to your group, one of the things you want to do is you want to be informed so you can explain exactly what's going on in your district and your area, you know, events, you know, get, you know, like for instance, this event here, you go to GSR, should be enthusiastic about the convention. Get people to sign up. Get people to get rooms. You know, you don't just sit there and go, let's see, there's, I guess we're having a convention coming up. I got more information up here. You know, that's not how we do it. You got to be enthusiastic. Get involved. It's very important that our messages, our main message, of course, is recovery is the 12 steps. But part of the thing is, you know, let's have fun. If we didn't have fun here, no one would be here. You know, it's more than just, okay, I worked the 12 steps, I'm sober, now what? Part of what I found in my recovery is that I get to enjoy life. I get to be a member in life. And part of that is the fact that I attempt to no longer be selfish and self-centered. Now, I don't always succeed, but I attempt. One of the ways I found that is by giving back. Doing those little jobs in service have helped me to get out of myself. It's still my number one thing to do is to be in myself. You know, I have this thinking disease up here, and this thinking tells me that my thinking is okay when my thinking is not okay, and I have to be constantly reminded. And that's that God consciousness. I have to keep committed to God, to these steps, to a higher power, whatever words you choose to use. And I find the best ways to help others. And that's not just here, of course. That's practice these principles in all my affairs. But right now we're talking about service to the group. So, you know, the groups, it's best expressed in the first tradition. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon CA unity. So that goes back to making sure that we're all on the same page together. We have guidelines, and they're just guidelines. But we found that the guidelines are made from people who made lots of mistakes over the years. And, you know, that's what the World Service, you know, AA has this little blue book here, which is their guidelines and the concepts in there. And, you know, they didn't just come up with this one day. It's years of trial and tribulations and, you know, making mistakes and making changes and trying to keep growing and trying to be keep involved. So what kind of problems, you know, the groups are guided by principles before personalities, hopefully. As we all know, they're not always guided that way, but that's what we shoot for. And there's certain principles. One is the spirit of rotation. It's having different people get involved. I mean, I've got a great gift out of being of service in all the ways, shapes, and forms. Now, should I continue that gift or should I deny it to somebody else because I like this position? You know, it's my job, my responsibility to make sure that other people get that same choice. One of my favorite things I've always read is Dr. Bob in his story in the Big Book talks about four reasons to do service. One is sense of duty. Two, it is a pleasure. Usually it's a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. I translate to that I have to give back. Must. I know the book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. I also know that the word must is in that book numerous times. On page 159, it says, I must help the addict alcoholic who still suffers. And must is a very strong word for me. It's not suggested. It's very simple. The book is suggested only the same way it suggests you wear a parachute when you jump out of an airplane. So that's my view on that, not the World Service Board of Trustees. My view is that I must help others. And that's, you know, I want to get healthy. You know, it's in here how to get healthy. The Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me how to do it. And I must help other people. Dr. Bob was right there. So what are some of the problems sometimes you get at a group level? You know, it says, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Yeah, our group conscience. I've been to many groups where, you know, you have a strong person who has a lot of sobriety who might be put on a pedestal, maybe not. It's never a good idea to put any human being on a pedestal. But they might be, and sometimes they might have control of the group conscience. You know, might not be so as at ease to speak up because they're afraid or they feel they might be felt, be made different. When I first came around, I didn't want to say anything because I felt I was different. I felt no one, and who would want to hear my opinion? You know, I'm a nobody, I'm just a pile of crap. And of course, I had to work through those steps to become a better human being and then help others become a better human being. So when I'm at a group conscience, when I'm at my group, my home group, or any of the groups I regularly attend, and there's business meeting, I have a responsibility to share and to talk. And everybody who's a member of that group has a responsibility to share and talk and shouldn't be afraid to speak up. You might, no one might make your opinion. You might be said, no, wrong. That's okay. Because someone might say, oh, I didn't think of that. My very first World Service Conference, there was a motion brought to the floor. I don't remember what it was. It was the Public Information Committee. And the motion was made, and I'm thinking, awesome, what a great idea. Why are we even wasting time speaking about this? This is great, this is a no-brainer. And of course, we had discussion and debate, and I was open-minded, and I'm listening. And when it was time to vote, I was like, this is a horrible idea. Why are we even considering this idea? I totally changed my mind by listening. Even though I was dead set, I didn't think it was even a consideration. I had just enough open-mindedness and willingness to hear someone else's viewpoint and realize that this was not a good idea and totally changed my mind. And that's part of having an informed group conscience, is letting everyone speak and everyone talk, and everyone be part of. It's vital. The group conscience, I'm going to read something here. This is a gentleman, Dean Kay, who served as a AA delegate in Northern California and then managed the Seattle Central office. There are two ways to arrive at a group conscience. The competitive way permits the person with the loudest voice to push his ideas across, take a vote, and come up with a majority decision. This is not an informed group conscience. In the cooperative way, group members come together in mutual trust to arrive at a group decision, not one individual's personal triumph. Dean's formula for a cooperative and informed group conscience calls for facts or presentations on both sides of a question. The meeting is not thrown open for general discussion. This would allow the more vocal members to set the debate. It is suggested that the chairperson call on each member in turn, allowing a specific time for each to speak. No member should speak a second time until all have had their turns. Thus, this gives even the quietest person an equal chance. It is important, Dean noted, that the minority voice always be heard, but it should be borne in mind that while the minority voice is sometimes right, it is just as often wrong. Unless the minority voice is decidedly persuasive, it should be considered in its proper light as a minority voice. To permit the minority always to influence the majority is to permit the tail to wag the dog. We have concepts, you know, of service. You know, there's 12 steps, there's 12 traditions, there's 12 concepts. If you look at the triangle in that other fellowship, the outside issue, it's three-sided, you know, recovery, service, and unity. And, you know, to me, if I take away one of those sides, the triangle collapses. So I have to be part of all three of those. I have to have recovery, the 12 steps. I have to have unity, the 12 traditions. And I have to have service, the 12 concepts. And we have a fifth concept which allows us to have the minority always be heard. And it's always important that even if you're sure you're right and there's no question in your mind, and you have, you know, it's in the manual, it's right here, is that everyone gets a chance to share. What I have found for me is that it teaches me patience, it teaches me tolerance, and sometimes it teaches me that I'm not right. Because someone will say something that, oh, I didn't think of that. That I don't know everything. So it's really a very important thing, you know. It's important that you have the group business meetings, that you allow the group to make changes and grow. Because, you know, we don't like change. I don't like change at all. I'm very happy with my home group. It's the way it is. Someone wanted to change one part of the format a few weeks ago, and my first reaction was, no, it's good. We've done that for 20 years. We don't need to change it. But once again, that's that loudest voice at the meeting saying, hey, I'm doing it my way. The hell with you guys. But, you know, business meeting was called. There was talk about it. And fortunately, they did it right. They did it my way. But, you know, had they not, I've been at meetings where they haven't done it my way, and that's okay. As long as we make an informed decision, as long as everyone gets to participate. And it's not just at the group level, it's at every level of service. Okay, so it's very important that everyone has that chance to be part of. So there's always going to be problems. Like I said, the group conscious is one way of solving those problems in groups. It also allows the group to have a time out to cooling off periods, teaches us patience, courtesy, willingness to listen. Plus, we learn that sense of fairness, and we trust in a power greater than ourselves. Because that informed decision is tradition two. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. So, once you've served at your group and you've been part of, hopefully you get to participate farther down the chain. You know, the deal is that we want people to get involved in all levels of service. So if you have, I know you know, you guys don't have districts here, I don't believe in Wisconsin. Some areas have, some places have districts, otherwise you go to your area and you get to help more people. You know, the things that we do at our area meetings or district meetings affect, you know, our group, we're affecting a small amount of people here. As we spread out, we're affecting more people. It's also important to remember that we have tradition four, for each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or CA as a whole. So whenever we make those decisions, we have to always keep in mind that we could be affecting other groups, because people say, oh, well, they did it, how come we can't do it? They broke that tradition, why can't we do it? And of course, it's always important that we take into consideration. And that's why you also ask for help. You know, I was taught early on, don't make any decisions without talking to someone in my own personal sobriety. That can also apply when I'm doing making decisions for my group. You know, that part of that informed decision. You have delegates you can talk to. You have a trustee you can go to. You have a whole board if you want to. You have the World Service Office. You have elder statesmen. You also pray have bleeding deacons. And hopefully as we grow in quantity of time, we develop quality of sobriety. Not always the case. You hope there's a correlation, but there's not always. But we find people who whose interest lies in the betterment of the whole, and not in the betterment of myself, what I want. You know, Jeff, good elder statesman here, tries to carry the message. Whether you agree with him or not, I mean, Jeff and I have had numerous conversations over the years, and mostly at opposite sides. But yet, I respect his view and his opinion because it comes from an informed group, an informed opinion. I know, Jeff, what can I tell you? I like arguing with you, it's fun. And that, it's not arguing, it's just discussion. That's it. You ever hear people go, oh, I'm not going to go to the area meeting. All they do is argue. It's all politics. I've been to, in Illinois, well over 200 area meetings and over 100 district meetings. And in all those times, I've seen two arguments. I've seen lots of discussion and debate. I've seen lots of people who are passionate about their ideas and who discuss it. I've only seen two people get in an argument where it was like, you know, nose to nose. But people have passion, and people sometimes don't always know how to express it. It's never what we say, it's how we say it. But once again, we go back to not everyone's as healthy as everyone else. Some of us are still very sick. I mean, I'm still, like I said, I've been over 200 area meetings. Think how sick I am. And I continue to do service at the world level. I am very sick. I need lots of help. But what I've learned is the fact that that's growing experiences for me. Growing to the fact that I know that people sometimes are not going to act the way I expect them to act, how I think they should act, what I know is right. If we have time, I'm going to talk about something called meeting etiquette, which is a workshop that was done in an AA meeting out in Oceanside, Maryland, which is totally, it has nothing to do with World Services. But you know, it's about the fact that we learn, service teaches us new ways of thinking, new ways of growing and learning. So like I said, we go to the districts, we go to the areas, we get to help more people. You know, we get involved with those 12 concepts of service. There's a couple of them that are very important. One is the right of decision. You have a vote, you have a voice. Whenever you're going to your group meeting or your district, you have something to say. You know, you have a right to be represented and participate. You know, as a GSR, I talk about that, well, my group says I have to do this, so I have to do it that way. No. We have those concepts that say, you find new information, you discover that you don't feel that that's the right way to do something, you learn something new at the conference, you can change your voice, you can change your vote. You know, those are things that we don't want to pigeonhole anybody. We don't have those rigid rules and regulations. We have the right of appeal. We talked about the fifth concept, that there's always the minority vote is always heard. I've seen the conference floor change. I've seen a vote almost entirely, one or two people voting no and everyone else voting yes. And from those one or two people's fifth concept, changing the entire conference floor. You know, you have 150 people on the floor there. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. But you can do that because that's why we let everyone be heard. That's why it's an informed group conscience. You know, we talked about the warranties of the conference and delegated authority. The other part about, you know, one of the things we do in and unfortunately sometimes we don't have enough people, but we have a concept that talks about putting the right person in the right job. You know, we don't put a newcomer as a delegate. You know, who's never worked the steps or knows anything about the traditions. You know, a GSR should not have 12 weeks of sobriety, you know. They should have a year of sobriety. They need to be informed about the tradition, so when they need a group business meeting, they know what they're doing. But a lot of times you say, hey, we got nobody else, this guy will do it. You know, we're desperate, we'll take anybody. Our concepts also talk about sometimes we have to be a little brave and leave the spot open. You know, we want to get people involved, and at the same time we want to make sure the right people do the right jobs because they have to get done. And if you allow sometimes in certain positions, people can be harmful and not helpful. If you ask someone to sponsor you who's never worked the steps, what do you think you're going to get? You know, as a sponsor, I have the ability to kill somebody. You know, my message is not out of that book, not out of the 12 steps, and I speak some kind of gibberish, I could hurt somebody severely. You know, if that person takes trust in me, and having service is putting trust in somebody. So in the same way as an individual, I can do that, I'm careful at the groups and the districts. If I put someone in charge of hospitals and institutions, and they decide to, you know, work their own program and not follow the guidelines and the suggestions that Cocaine Anonymous suggests, that message could be very dangerous. And it could also be harmful to Cocaine Anonymous. If you say, yeah, it's okay to, you know, as long as you're not doing cocaine and you're shooting heroin, it's okay. Probably not a good message to be carrying in an H&I meeting. So, you know, those kind of things are important that we have put the right people in the right places. We'll also talk about the 12 traditions we have. The most important thing we have when it comes to the groups and the traditions are, you know, the groups, tradition four, where is the group affecting other groups as a whole? Where's our common welfare? And when we deal with those kind of situations, that's really the first question you ask yourself. It's the most difficult thing as a member of the Board of Trustees to respond to tradition questions sometimes, because our job is to allow the groups to make those decisions. Our job is to inform them and let them hopefully make that informed group conscience. We don't tell a group, no, you can't do this. We may show them historical information, present them with examples of why something was right or wrong, but it's up to the groups. You guys are at the top. The group is the most important body we have, unity. You know, because without that, I mean, I can't get this by myself. I needed those groups. I needed those people to be there for me. So it's very important that the traditions are there, we're put in place so that those groups will remain focused and available. You know, we are Twelve and Twelve talks about over the years every conceivable deviation from our 12 steps and 12 traditions have been tried. That was sure to be since we are so largely a band of ego-driven individualists, children of chaos. We have definitely played with every brand of fire only to emerge unharmed and we think wiser. These very deviations created a vast process of trial and error which under the grace of God has brought us to where we should stand today. That's on page 146 in the 12 and 12. Like I said earlier, I don't want to be told what to do. We have great ideas. We get off on tangents. We have to always remember that in doing service, our job is to help others and to be part of the unity. So it's very, very important that we maintain our traditions in doing the service we do. One of the things we end up doing as we go down the chain, we become an area, maybe we're going to become a committee chair. Maybe we're going to do some work, you know, become an area chairperson, a delegate. So what is leadership in CA? You know, it talks about for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. So what makes a good leader in the non-addict world? You know, Bill talks about, and Bill Wilson talked about in the concepts, good service leaders, together with sound and appropriate methods of choosing them, are at all levels indispensable for our future functioning and safety. Leader is defined as someone who leads or guides or inspires others, one who is in charge or in command of others, one who has influence or power, especially of a political nature, one who goes first. Leadership is capacity or ability to lead, guidance, direction, the position or office of a leader. We're not dictators. We're not commanders. We're trusted servants who are there to guide, educate, help corral, be enthusiastic. You know, I see so many committees at all levels that there's one person, and they do all the work. And people get involved, they don't want to participate. You know, I go back to the fact that it's our unity. We're all supposed to be involved. We're all supposed to be helping others. You know, a good leader is someone who can get everyone on board and get everyone working towards the same direction through an informed group conscience. Not through their own ideas of what they believe, but being able to listen and being able to be open to being wrong. You know, it talks about the groups have the right to be wrong. Well, so do us as individuals. We have the right to be wrong. We also have the right, we also have the responsibility to correct our mistakes when we make them and be willing to be humble and understand that, yeah, okay, so I'm going to be embarrassed here because I'm an idiot. That's okay. Because, you know, once again, our job is we love each other. So it combines that love and service. I'll talk a little bit more. This is an article from Bill W. talked about leadership. On one hand, the fellowships want people who do not govern, who are but trusted servants, almost as if there were only principles and no personalities in leadership at all. On the other hand, the fellowships wants people who can and will lead if asked and are willing to exert some real personality when appropriate. On one hand, we members want structure, but when the structure is set in place, we do not like it at all. On one hand, we want people to lead, yet we challenge them and rebel against them and their authority at every chance we can. He then goes on to state that the solutions are somewhere in the middle on these many points. First, while our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. They still remain leaders. There is a basic notion that everyone, even in our lives and in the fellowship, has someone in authority over them. Usually it's your wife. Someone has to run the GSO, make the decisions on your chips to buy and when and where the meetings will grow. It is almost a serenity prayer issue. The fact that someone needs to be in charge, we cannot change. Not only do we ask for the serenity to keep authority, accept authority, but the wisdom to recognize its value and the courage to work with it. So, which is, goes against everything that I came into these rooms thinking. You know, that was not how I wanted to act. I was, like I said, I was the opposite of that. Yeah, I don't want authority. You're wrong. I'm right. Stick it. Second, Bill indicates that no leader is faceless and neither is any leader perfect. He urges that the fellowship is best served, it is most diligent in the selection of its leaders, and that we must carefully indicate in each level of service what special skills will be required, and the fellowship must continually review how our leaders are found, selected, and trained. We have only to seek these folks out and trust them to serve us. Our leaders do not drive by mandate, they lead by example. In effect, we are saying to them, act for us, but don't boss us. So, yeah, you think it's easy? Try to fulfill that responsibility. You know, it goes against everything that we've learned and how I grew up and was taught. You know, that selfishness and self-centeredness, the root of my problem. And therefore, once again, everything I do, I have to apply those steps. I have to be personally, spiritually fit to the best of my ability to be the best leader, the best service I can be. But that's always a process. It's never going to be, you know, I just don't walk into these rooms and I'm all perfect and everything's good. And that's why the more service I do, the more patience I get, the more acceptance I get, the more tolerance I get. You know, he says good leadership never passes the buck. We have to be able to affect change. Bill says that when called upon, leadership must always give its reasons and good ones. And further, a leader must realize that even very prideful or angry people can sometimes be dead right, when the calm and the more humble are quite mistaken. So just because I'm all good and you love me all, doesn't mean I'm right all the time. That goes back to keeping being open-minded and listening to everyone talk. So it's not exactly an easy thing, but it's a necessity. We need to step up and be part of. You have to remember that in doing service that we're all addicts. We're all volunteers. We all have the right to be wrong. We should never be punitive. We should never be, you know, it's very easy, like I said, it's not what we say, it's how we say it. The opportunity to serve and lead, it's a gift, and it's humbling, and it's something we do every day, not only in the rooms, but outside, you know, dealing with our families, dealing with fellows, dealing at work. It's an opportunity to serve others. The key to striking that fine balance between leading and not leading, about serving and not serving, and the ability to change and evolve along the way, that's what makes a good leader. So, you know, and when we talk about love and service and we look at what that really means and some of the challenges that involve with doing that, you know, the biggest thing, of course, is personalities, principles before personalities. You know, it's the hardest thing I have to deal with sometimes is someone standing in a meeting or a business meeting or whatever the case is, whether or not they're right or wrong, but demanding it. This is the way it should be done. This is how it is. And I, knowing my view at least, is that, no, it's the exact opposite of that. But being able to express that in a kind, loving way. Unity is a challenge always. You know, we have these personalities, which sometimes we end up with certain, I don't like using the word cliques, but groups of people who, you know, are against other groups of people. And unity is our basic, you know, it's part of that triangle. It's one of the most important things we can do. We have to be together. You know, divided we fall. Together we're strong. Together we can recover. We admitted we were powerless. It's a we program. That's that unity part. Once again, we talked about the selection of people, our concepts. How to disagree without being disagreeable. Once again, it's never what you say, it's how you say it. And trusting our trusted servants. Once we put someone in the position, let's let them try to do the job. So, and that part of it, I have a couple of handouts I'll give out to you guys about, just for some reference for you, about group inventories. One of the ways that the groups stay strong, whether it's a big group or an area or a district, is by taking inventory of itself, just like we do for ourselves in step four. I have two different traditions checklist and a group inventory format. And I've done these at meetings. There's in that outside issue fellowship that I also attend, I actually did a traditions inventory for a group of young people's in AA group. And they had asked that to come do where they're going. They had certain goals and ideas they wanted to do as this group. And so we did this traditions checklist with them. I've done this group inventory at individual groups and at committees. So they're kind of interesting stuff. It keeps the groups healthy. It's important that we realize that we don't get stagnant and that we're able to change and grow, and that there's opportunity for everyone to be part of. So before I move on, is there any questions anybody has at this point? Anyways, just step, open your mind up and talk.
Doing great.
Thanks, Diane. All right, well then I'll talk about one more thing here, which absolutely has nothing to do with Cocaine Anonymous per se. It has to do with meetings. This, like I said, this was a workshop that was given by a gentleman out in Oceanside, Maryland, and it was called Meeting Etiquette. Once again, the groups are autonomous. This is something for not to make rules at your group, but for food for thought, and realize what's important, how we carry the message at the group level, and about me as a human being, trying to be respectful of others, trying to realize that not be the selfish, self-centered person I always was. So it talks about there are no written rules or proper conduct in CA meetings. Although most of the following may not be mentioned at meetings or listed in the literature or pamphlets, It is often passed on through sponsorship. We have found that practicing these suggested behaviors has strengthened our foundations as we embark on a new way of life. Remember that there is no pain in change, there is only pain in the resistance to change. So what this is some ideas on how to be respectful of others. And this is one person's view, not even necessarily, I don't agree with all this, but it's food for thought. And I have some copies of this too, but one thing it talks about is people, you're going to be part of a group, and this really applies more to if you have a home group, but any group, is to show up early and stay late. You know, some of the best meetings I have are the meetings before the meeting or the meeting after the meeting. You know, I learn more, I get to be part of. Especially if I'm new, I want to feel part of. And by being one of the elder statesmen there, maybe, I can talk to the newcomers. That's part of being service, is giving back. You know, volunteer to help and set up and clean up, more service. I've done many rooms setting up, cleaning up. I even emptied ashtrays back in those days. And meet other members. Always put our hand out, which also is the most important thing in service. Make the newcomer feel welcome. They talk about appropriate attire. And I had an issue when I first read this, but one of the things they say here is that I have to remember that not everyone is as healthy as I might be. And some of us are very sick. So sometimes appropriate attire might be beneficial because we might be hurting somebody else. You know, we might want to show off our great abs or our lovely body or whatever the case might be, but maybe is that appropriate or not? And this is all just food for thought. So, and then once the meeting's involved, you know, how many times do you see someone in a meeting? This is one of my favorite things. Let's see what's going on here. You know, the speaker's talking or maybe the newcomer's trying to share. I mean, I was new, I was ultra sensitive. I was afraid of everything. And so it took courage for me to actually, you know, want to say something at a meeting because my first thought was, I'm going to say something wrong, I'm going to be made fun of, you know, no one's going to like what I say. So if I finally get the courage to do that and people are sitting there going, yeah, it's on my phone, I've got to text it, Yeah, to me that's about as rude, to me personally, that's about as rude and disrespectful as I could be. When I'm in a meeting, this should not be out. You know, now, is there an exception? I talked earlier, I had a friend of mine, we were at a meeting together and his phone, the guy was giving a lead and his phone goes off and he picks up and goes, okay, I'll be right there, and he walks out. And the guy who was giving the lead stopped and said, I'm sorry, I hope we're not interrupting your phone call. And he just left. And after the meeting, I went to the speaker and go, I agree that usually you should not have your phone on in a meeting, but that was his wife calling him, telling him she's going into labor. So there are occasionally exceptions, but generally, there are very few exceptions. You know, I can probably wait a good hour before I have to text back my girlfriend or boyfriend or talk to, you know, whoever the case is, my good buddy about the fact that the Hawks are losing right now. I can wait to do that. That's not so important, you know, as important as saving my own life and making sure that I'm there to help save someone else's life. So, you know, I should remain respectful when I'm in the meeting, not fidgeting, not playing with papers, not reading other stuff while someone's talking or sharing. Is that appropriate? I mean, you could do it, but is that really the person you want to be? That's not who I want to be for myself. So when I'm in a meeting, I sit still. I don't get up and get coffee in the middle of the meeting. I try to, you know, have that. If I want to do that, do it before I sit down, you know. Now occasionally, okay, you might have to go to the bathroom. I get it. You know, sometimes you have to get up. But you know what? I don't know what's going to save my life, what's going to help me. I might miss that then if I'm too busy doing other things. That one person might say just the right thing I need to hear that day. Or maybe I'll say something to hear someone else. So it's important. So you know, like I said, I heard people, guess what? Guess what's happening over there? People are whispering. Those kind of things are not necessarily appropriate. I've seen people, you know, cutting their nails, combing their hair, dressing themselves. Is it proper? Well, you know, once again, it's food for thought and being respectful of other people. You know, all these things show a lack of interest and respect. And respect for our speakers or others who are sharing shows that we believe the CA program has something to offer for us and for others and to help with our program. It talks about here about, yeah, if you're called upon to share, about being responsible and respectful, not going on like for 12 minutes yourself, you know. There's a statement that one of the meetings and we read, I don't know where it came from, I don't know if it's accurate, exactly, it says, Bill W. says, any commenter Any comment longer than 3 minutes shows that the commenter is indeed in bondage of self. I haven't been very refined in saying that anywhere in the literature, but I have seen spots where he talks about us being time-sensitive and concise in our statements to let other people have the same opportunities we have to share at a meeting. Some meetings only have X amount of time, so maybe if everyone wants a chance to share, we have to allow everyone that opportunity, and we shouldn't be so selfish in our own views. Do we talk about recovery at meetings? Do we talk about, I have stubbed my big toe today and it hurts, and I'm there to get a message of hope, faith, and courage. So, and then too, there's meetings where people sometimes can be disruptive. Maybe they have mental issues or other issues. We have to be respectful, but we also sometimes have to be what's in the best interest of the meeting. Depending on what that level of discomfort is, a leader might have to take some outside for a minute or ask them to put themselves in an uncomfortable position. Maybe ask someone to be quiet. Of course, always try to do things in a respectful way. Whenever we're doing any service, whenever we're doing anything that helps with another addict, we should try to be as respectful and kind and loving and tolerant as we can. And that's always in the message of how we say things and not what we say. Because it's so easy to say the same thing, mean, cruel, or with kindness and passion, kindness and love. There are no dues or fees, but we have to keep those rooms open. So if you can, donate. Dollar doesn't go as far as it used to anymore. Certain meetings have more expenses than others, but whatever it is, don't forget, part of the gift we've received is the fact that we can give back and not be so selfish. It's amazing how easy it was to buy drinks at the bar for everybody, but put that extra dollar in the basket. Oh, got to pry the wallet open. So it always helps that we have money to help us carry the message. Because outside the group, it's easy at the group, or when I'm talking one-on-one. But when we get to the areas in the world, it requires funds sometimes to do public information, to send books to the jails. Those kind of things require funding. It talks about this meeting etiquette, of course, which is beware of 13-steppers. If you're an elder statesman, take people aside and talk to them. Realize that if I want to be selfish myself, I might be costing someone their sobriety. It takes a lot of work to be in a relationship. If you're not spiritually fit, you might not be ready to do that. And everyone's at their own pace. I'm not just saying that. I know for me, I had to put a lot of time and work into my sobriety in the beginning. It took a lot of work and effort. And if I had other things that kept me from putting that effort in, I don't know if I'd be where I'm at today. So I was fortunate enough not to have that. I stuck with the winners and used my sponsorship and my sponsorship family. And always remember, of course, anonymity. So what's said here stays here. So they have at the back of this, they have some, like for groups, they have a little workshop thing that you guys can take a look at your groups and decide if you guys ever want to use any of this stuff. It's good stuff, but the meetings, they're autonomous, and we all grow at our own pace. So like I said, there are no rules or regulations. That's really all I have on the subject, so I will, if anybody has any questions or any comments they want to say. Otherwise, we'll be happy to end early.
I think within the third condition, there's something that you didn't mention, and that was that Bill tells you how there really is no governing in AARC. But what we rely upon is just like the addict. If the addict strives off of that spiritual path, eventually he's going to fail and he's going to use again. And it's the same thing as what happens. You depend on that. If a group is doing something that they shouldn't be doing and they're striving off of that spiritual path, eventually they're going to fail. And that's the that's the bottom line. And that's, I think it's really important.
That's why it's important to have good leadership, put the right people in the right positions to make sure, and even if it's not a trusted servant at the group, an elder statesman at the group, to say, hey guys, let's think about this, let's look at this. It's not like, no, you can't do that. Let me explain to you why this might not be the best interest of the group. What message are you going to listen to better? If someone says that, or, no, that's not, we're not doing that, that's wrong. Immediately, I'm going to rebel against that. But if someone says, You know, that's interesting what you said, but let me point out some information to you. Maybe this is another way of looking at this. I'm going to be more open to hear that message. So yeah, absolutely. And as you said, the group's the lifeblood. We have to be here. You know, if that group wasn't here, I'm going to walk into an empty room and get sober. Not going to work well. Thanks, Jeff. Any other comments or criticism, complaints, questions? All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for allowing me to be of service. So our time is not up, but since we don't have anything else going on, if you have any questions that went unanswered or if you feel the need to share, please introduce yourself to someone after the meeting and exchange phone numbers or come up and talk. We are all here to help. So after form a circle and after a moment of silence, we'll close with the serenity prayer.